everyone. I'm Haley Allam, and this is Mom Life in Luxembourg. If you're a parent new to Luxembourg, then this is the podcast for you. From crèches to crèmes, we'll cover everything you need to know about raising kids and living your best life in the Grand Duchy. Moin, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today, I'm joined by the global dietitian Diana Reed to talk about eating disorders in teens and what the resources are here in Luxembourg. This is actually the second time Diana is joining me on the show. She's an amazing resource for the English-speaking community here. If you haven't had a chance to listen to her episode on how to build body positivity in kids, definitely go back to season one and give it a listen. It's one of my all-time favorite episodes of Mom Life in Luxembourg. Now, if you guys know me and you listen often, you know that all my kids are little. My youngest just got out of diapers. So the idea of being tasked with raising kids who have eating disorders is just not on my radar at all. But one of the editors at RTL suggested this as a show topic, and then totally unrelated, I was checking out a prospective podcast editor on LinkedIn that a friend had recommended. And you know when you check out someone on LinkedIn, you view their experience, poke around their profile. His latest post was that about 2 weeks ago, his tween son was diagnosed with anorexia and they were in the emergency room. He was totally blindsided as a parent and is now left having to cope and pick up the pieces with his family. So I took that as a sign that I should put this episode out into the world now. If it helps even one person on their journey, I will be happy. So please give it a listen and let me know what you think. As always, I would love to hear from you. You can reach me at momlife@rtltoday.lu or you can find me on social media at momlife in Luxembourg. Merci Filmus and enjoy the show. Hi, Diana. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure. Before we launch into eating disorders in teens in the Grand Duchy, I'd like to start with a little intro about you. What are you doing here?
What am I doing here?
In Luxembourg. Not like spiritually.
I was like, wow, I wasn't prepared for that. My husband used to work for Amazon. So we are one of those Seattle families from the US and we came about 8 years ago. He stopped working a couple of years ago and then I started my dietetics practice back in 2019. And so I'm continuing to work in a private practice working with a variety of different nutritional concerns.
Yes. So tell me a little bit about the global dietitian.
Yeah, I was originally specialized in gut health. So I work with people that have a number of food intolerances, food allergies, things like celiac disease, and other gut concerns. And then over time, that has also crossed into a number of other realms, including eating disorders. And then I am a mom of a couple of neurodivergent kiddos. So that has been something that I've really dove into learning a lot more about. I'm definitely a very curious learner. And so as my kids went through some various struggles and challenges, I really dove in and like to learn a lot about what was going on with their brains and how that affects nutrition and general health and well-being. And that has now become one of my specialties as well.
Super. Okay. We are going to do an episode totally diving in to nutrition for neurodivergent kids because shout out, I am also a mom of a neurodivergent boy. And yeah, but so for today, we're going to focus in on eating disorders. I thought that was really interesting when my editor at RTL brought it up because what I know about Gen Y, it seems very body affirming, whatever shape you want to be, Lizzo. That's how it seems to me. But clearly, I'm out of my wheelhouse. So tell me, what is going on with the kids these days?
Eating disorders, I would say in general, do tend to show up in the adolescent years. So that can be preteen 11, 12, all the way up to 18. But I will say that they are not exclusive to teenagers. They are not exclusive to skinny people. They are not exclusive to white people. They are not exclusive to women or any particular gender. So in general, eating disorders can affect a broad number of people. I would love it if people were really and truly body conscious or body positive, I would say instead. While that is increasingly possible and there is much more celebration for things like health at every size or intuitive eating or body positivity, we still do live in a largely patriarchal society. We live in a society where women are often judged by their appearance before they are judged by their capabilities or personality or intellect. And then social media, I think, has really done a big number on making people much more aware of what they look like.
Yeah, absolutely. It's proven for social media to plummet your self-esteem, especially in women.
Yeah, the research is pretty damning when it comes to social media and its effect on body image. But I think in general, even prior to social media, people have had eating disorders for a long period of time. So it's not necessarily just about body image. It's not necessarily just about thinness. There are other pieces that can contribute to people having eating disorders, such as genetics, such as trauma, such as other types of illnesses. Like I said, I still work a lot with people that have gut issues or problems with digesting food, and that can also create anxiety and stress about food. So people can come to an eating disorder from a number of different places.
And you mentioned it can affect anyone, so it's not just the skinny girls we need to worry about.
Correct. In fact, somebody can have anorexia in a larger body.
Really?
The reality is, while the original definition of anorexia nervosa was certain BMI or a certain amount of weight loss, individuals can have the behaviors and signs and symptoms of anorexia in a larger body, and that can result from losing a significant amount of weight in a very short amount of time. And what we know about eating disorders is dieting is one of the biggest predictors of eating disorders. So what can happen is when people start to lose weight, maybe completely innocently, maybe I'm just going to lose a couple kilo here and there. When a certain amount of weight is hit, and it really depends on the person, if that weight loss is too fast and too much, that can trigger changes in the brain, which can then create the ability for that person to slip into that anorexia mentality.
Is it like you've lost so much weight, so now you have this high of good for me and I'm going to do more and more?
No, it's actually much more neurological, where, and I won't get into too much of that because it is fairly complex, but in general, there are some changes that happen to a starving or malnourished brain along with the physical changes in the body, and the body reacts by turning off certain functionality and certain things within the physiology of the body. But the brain also, because it's lost its ability to really think logically and clearly, those anorexic thoughts or those eating disorder thoughts become more and more prevalent. And it's almost, there's a reason why eating disorders are considered mental illnesses.
You just basically stopped me in my tracks when you said a starving brain, because yeah, I know anorexia as a starving body, but it really, you are starving your brain.
Yeah. And that's the thing that drives significantly the behaviors, the inability to gain weight, the inability to eat more food, to even see logically and practically the current shape of the physical body. Because if you talk to somebody with anorexia, they will tell you, oh, I'm way too fat. And regardless of whether they're almost dying, they will see really and truly that they will view themselves in a body that they don't actually currently possess.
And that is called body dysmorphia, right?
That is definitely a great way to categorize that. It's not a great thing to have, but that is how I would categorize it.
Yeah, none of this is great, but we're here because we're parents and we care about our kids. So
yep, absolutely.
Is anorexia the most prevalent eating disorder in Luxembourg?
Actually, there aren't a lot of great statistics for Luxembourg, being a small population that it is, and there aren't researchers working on specifically looking at sort of the epidemiology or the number of individuals that have one eating disorder versus the other. Globally, anorexia is actually a really small amount. More likely, we would see people with binge eating disorder. A lot of those people actually aren't diagnosed because there's a lot of shame around that. You might see that all the way from teenagers to older adults. Bulimia would be the second one in terms of the number of people, and anorexia is probably affects the fewest people, but it is the one that affects people the most. Generally, it's the most critical of an illness and more likely to lead to cardiac failure or death than the others.
Okay, so even though anorexia is the least popular, it is, we'll call it, the most deadly.
Yes.
And so therefore it takes the limelight. Can you define what binge eating is? Because we like joke about binge eating.
Yeah, from a clinical perspective, it would be somebody that eats regularly, and regularly can, and I'm not going to get the DSM diagnosis, the criteria right here off the top of my head, but generally it is going to be somebody that eats more than most people would eat in any given sitting. They would feel, in general, quite out of control with their eating. They may or may not vomit, but it's not necessarily that's their goal, would be to purge afterwards. So there's a sense of quantity, then there's a sense of frequency, which generally would be 3 or more times a week. And then there would be longevity. For somebody to be diagnosed, this would have had to have been a pattern generally for 6 months or so. And then, of course, there's that feeling of being out of control and sometimes even not aware of what's happening when they're binging.
Okay, so basically eating yourself to a feeling of sickness.
Yep.
Frequently.
Okay. Yeah.
What should you do as a parent if you have suspicions that your son or daughter might be having an unhealthy relationship with food, veering into, ideally you want to catch it before it becomes a full-blown psychological disorder?
Yeah, I think there's a fine line between being observant and close with your children and then tailing them around and being suspicious. So what I usually tell people is trust your gut. If you notice your child's behavior around food changing, if you notice all of a sudden somebody's only eating quote unquote healthy, or they've stopped eating sweets, and while a lot of these things might sound nice, if it's a really noticeable change, and if your child's behavior, if they become somewhat secretive, if you notice changes in appetite, if you notice changes in their body structure, losing weight, kind of obsession with counting calories, there can be any number of things. But generally, just if you notice that your child doesn't seem to be acting like your child, that is a really good sign, along with those changes related to food or appetite or weight.
So let's say that you do, let's just go down this path, you notice some significant changes that you are concerned about. What's the best way to bring it up with them without putting them on the defensive and I hate you, mom?
Yeah, if only I had the magic wand to say the right thing. I think the reality is it depends on where a kid is in terms of the stage of their eating changes. If somebody has just started, oh, I'm going to eat a little bit better, great, support that. Keep your eye on it and say, okay, but we still want to eat a variety of foods. We still want to eat 3 times a day. Making sure that they're not all of a sudden going from 3 meals and some snacks to eating once a day. I would say just keeping in touch with them and saying, hey, how's it going with food? It seems like you've changed the way you're eating. Tell me more about that. Rather than necessarily being, I'm freaked out by what's happening with you.
That's what I would do.
Again, it depends on the parent. It depends on the kid. What I will say is if you feel concerned, go with your gut. Go right in there and say, I'm concerned. It looks like you've lost quite a bit of weight. I don't see you eating properly. Like, we need to talk about this. If your child refuses, I would say, okay, then we need to go to your doctor, and your doctor needs to examine you, and you need to talk about this with them.
Okay.
Because the one thing we know about eating disorders is there is something, and I won't be able to pronounce the word, but it's like some other mental illnesses where the person that is sick doesn't actually know they're sick, doesn't necessarily believe that they're sick, maybe in full-blown denial. It might come across to a parent as lying or dishonesty, but really and truly, often these kids have no idea, and they'll say, oh, I'm not sick enough to go to the doctor. I'm not sick enough to go to the hospital. I'm not sick enough. And the commonality is they're already really sick. Right. When that type of thought process is emerging. So trust your gut. Keep an eye on big changes in habits, in thought processes, in behavior with food, with their body, and then go seek help.
Okay. And what if you secretly think that your kid is a little overweight and could stand to lose a few pounds? How could you relay that message in a way that doesn't send them off the deep end and give them an eating disorder and fill them with shame, et cetera?
To be honest, I would not comment on my child's body.
Full stop.
Full stop. And in fact, one of the things that we say at my house is if somebody can't change whatever this appearance-related thing is in the next 30 seconds to 5 minutes, don't comment on it.
Okay.
So it might be, those are really great earrings. Those are nice shoes. I like your hair. We don't talk about bodies. That said, when we think about health, right? So the thing that I think is important is our body size and shape is not a marker of our health. Our behaviors are definitely things that can contribute to health and to our body size. So if I were going to counsel a parent who was concerned about their child's eating habits, then I would say, hey, let's talk about how we can get your child to be eating more of fruits and vegetables, maybe reducing certain types of foods, getting more exercise, etc. We would not talk about the child's body. We would talk about the child's habits.
Got it. Okay. And I think that's really important and really interesting because really you just look at their body. That's the first thing that
you see. Yeah, and
we
don't know if somebody's healthy or not by the shape of their body. We don't know that. We don't have any idea if somebody has high blood pressure or high glycemia or high cholesterol. Or on the other hand, we were just talking about anorexia. Somebody can be really thin and be incredibly unhealthy. People can say, oh, you look great. Somebody has anorexia or somebody's struggling with cancer. So in general, my rule of thumb is we don't comment on bodies. As a parent, if we're concerned about our child's behavior or health, we should definitely work with them on better behaviors and healthier habits. But in my both professional experience and just in terms of research, what we know is the more often that parents try and control their child's body, the more likely it is that is not going to end well for anybody, where the child is going to hide food, the child is going to sneak food, the child is eventually going to try and go on a diet and end up off the deep end with an eating disorder. So in general,
steer clear of discussing.
There's actually a great book by Virginia Soul Smith, and it is, and I'm not going to remember the title exactly. It's called Fat Talk, Raising Kids in a Diet Culture Generation. And it is a brilliant, amazing book. So if parents do have concerns about raising their kid, good eating habits, their child's body, or if a doctor has said, oh, your kid's BMI is too high, 100%, 150% recommend grabbing that book.
Okay.
It's fantastic for parents.
I'll put it in the show notes for sure.
One of the biggest risk factors for developing an eating disorder is dieting and weight loss.
How does dieting and weight loss go from something that is supposed to be physical to something that's in the mental plane?
And that's exactly what I was saying earlier, where the changes in our body that come from malnutrition, from rapid weight loss, where the body is in starvation mode and struggling, that can then sort of, for lack of a better phrase, trip a switch in the brain and the neurobiology that can then send a person into this place where they don't necessarily have the right vision of how they actually look. They don't necessarily aren't able to eat the food that they should. They've developed fears around food. They've developed social fears. People with eating disorders are often very isolated and very anxious and often very depressed. It basically goes from a malnutrition situation into sort of hitting particular genetic triggers that then turn it into this mental illness. Not everybody that goes on a diet will develop an eating disorder, but most people don't develop something like anorexia without having started dieting. Similarly, things like bulimia or binge eating disorder. Binge eating disorder is often a direct correlation to restrictive dieting. People starve themselves and they can only starve themselves for so long before then the body says, we really need to eat. And once they start eating, they can't stop. And then they go back the other way and say, okay, now I'm really going to go on a diet and lose weight. And that lasts for a period of time until the body says, I really don't like that. So then they go back and eat, and the body trying to sustain itself puts them in this place where uncontrolled eating is the result.
It's a vicious cycle.
It really is.
And it's really sad to think about that in your child.
Yeah.
In Luxembourg, mm-hmm. we talked about it's a very small place. What are there good resources here? besides yourself or including yourself?
I think, unfortunately, we are somewhat limited because we do not have, first thing, as we know, living in Luxembourg, there are many different cultures and many different languages. So in any kind of healthcare, it's often really hard to find the right specialist that speaks the language that you speak. So right there, that makes things somewhat challenging. We don't have myriad clinics for eating disorder treatment. We currently are just starting to develop medical programs for training doctors and dietitians here in Luxembourg. I am currently, I think, the only native English speaking dietitian in Luxembourg. There are several others that speak fluent, very good English. When I look at the group of us dietitians that tend to specialize in eating disorders, I would say it's a dozen or less.
Okay. So it's get on a wait list, most probably.
Often. And then with the changes with the psychotherapists and CNS now reimbursing for psychotherapy, that is, on the one hand, a really great thing, because in the past, psychotherapy and nutritional treatment of eating disorders were not reimbursed. So only people that were fairly wealthy could afford that. Dietitians, now we are able to work with eating disorder patients who will then get reimbursed by the CNS, and then psychotherapists as well. But then the challenge to that means that there are less, and there's more demand and less availabilities on people's schedules.
Would you recommend trying virtual therapy or virtual group therapy?
I think it really depends on the situation. If somebody is really ill, they're most likely not going to be in a situation where a group is a helpful, good idea.
If the resources in Luxembourg are scant, especially for English speakers, would you recommend perhaps a virtual therapy situation?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the situation. I have had a number of patients who maybe I will see in person, but then they have a therapist online, or sometimes the reverse. But the thing that really depends on the level of severity for that particular patient. If somebody has already been in a hospital treatment and is coming out and just needs partial treatment in terms of a dietitian or a therapist once a week versus intense therapy on a daily basis, that can work. If somebody is not necessarily in a full-blown eating disorder, but has got a lot of issues around body image and kind of disordered thoughts and behaviors around food, I think online groups, online therapy can be helpful. There are even things called eating disorder coaches, which are a cross between a nutritionist and a therapist, but they're not necessarily regulated and not nearly as well-trained as dietitians and therapists are. In general, somebody who's really ill is going to need to be served by a dietitian, a general practitioner, a psychiatrist, maybe for medication management, a psychotherapist. And if they're really sick, they may need to be hospitalized and have that team on site 24/7.
Obviously, for all the parents listening, the goal is to prevent all this before hospitals and hopefully even doctors are involved.
Yeah.
If a child or a teen tends towards anxiety, depression, worry, perfectionism, does that increase the likelihood of an eating disorder?
You basically just described a lot of the kind of personality factors that we would see in somebody with anorexia. So there are some common temperaments or even neurodivergent characteristics that we would see in anorexia. You named actually most of them. For things like bulimia or binge eating, we often see slightly different personality characteristics that may be more common in somebody with ADHD or somebody that's impulsive or struggles with kind of impulse control sort of thing. Again, it doesn't mean that everybody with those types of personalities are going to develop an eating disorder, but I think from a prevention perspective, not talking about bodies, not talking about good foods or bad foods or healthy foods or unhealthy foods, but really having a culture of certain foods give us lots of nutrition, certain foods are fun foods, food in general is a good and healthy thing for us, and really focusing more on consistency and kind of balance versus demonizing or, oh, you can't have ice cream, oh, you can't have sugar, or you gotta eat your vegetables. When we start to really say one food is bad or one food is good, then that kind of picks up a life of its own. If we can, just making food normal.
Where, neutral.
Yeah, absolutely. Where we make exercise the norm. We make getting 7-8 hours of sleep the norm. We make eating vegetables or fruit at every single meal the norm. We make desserts and things the norm on occasion.
Okay. So let's say that you're a parent and you're concerned about your child and they... We'll just say she's a she because this is mom life in Luxembourg. She calls you. What would the next steps look like?
I would usually, depending on the age, I would usually actually have the parent come see me first. If the child is 16, 17, 18, I might have the child and the parent come check in with me. But if we're talking about a younger child, anywhere from 10 to 15, the parents are mostly preparing the meals and doing the shopping. And so the child is still, for the most part, eating at home. So I would talk with the parents about, what do you see happening? What are those habits? How much weight has been lost? Or are you noticing signs of, as an example, of bulimia, of vomit after meals in the bathroom? What are the things that you're noticing? Again, depending on the severity, I would send somebody to their general practitioner for labs. I don't generally consult with people unless they are actively concerned and there is most likely an eating disorder in progress. So I'm probably not the best person to just call if somebody has some general concerns, which is hard as other parents.
Is your GP the first port of call?
Yeah, I think your GP would definitely be the first port of call. And I think that's often a really good thing because having that third party neutral person who can weigh the kid, measure the kid, talk with the kid, ideally with the parent and in private, run some labs. And then depending on the status of that, then I would probably be the next person.
And what are the labs that, like, generally one should order?
The doctors are going to know that. And I'll tell you, it's almost not even worth talking about because in the case of many eating disorders, the body is able to compensate for malnutrition that until somebody is really sick and requires hospitalization, very seldom do we actually see big changes in the labs.
Got it.
So we're going a lot more off of observable behaviors, changes in personality, changes in social activity, changes in body weight. Like I said, either somebody has become really thin or we notice that somebody seems to be eating a ton of food, but then not changing their body weight, or we notice vomit as in the case of bulimia. It is definitely going to be more behavioral depending on the eating disorder. But I will say, I have had parents call me for a consult, and it turned out that in many cases, parents are able, and I really do want to emphasize this, that parents are really able to support their kids. Parents are able to help feed their kids back to health. It depends on the state and the severity of an eating disorder, but the parents really are the first port of call in the sense of they're going to notice changes in their kid. And they are also going to be the ones that I tend to counsel to help them feed their child back to health. I want parents to know that even if something is going on with your child, it doesn't mean that everything is terrible and is going to go in a really bad way. The sooner we do find that somebody has disordered eating, the sooner we find that somebody is on a path towards an eating disorder, the sooner we can intervene. The more likely that child is to recover completely, the longer an eating disorder goes undetected and or untreated, the more likely it is to cause physical, psychological damage, and the relapse rates when somebody has had an eating disorder for a very long period of time, even if they go through treatment, the relapse rates tend to be higher.
Can I ask you a question that might be dumb? Where's the line between someone's just weird about food, uptight about food, or picky about food, or restrictive? Yeah. Where's the line between that and anorexia? Or an eating disorder, I guess I should say.
It is true. Lots of kids worry about calories. It is true. Lots of teenagers are worried about dieting. It is true that lots of teenage boys want to bulk up and build muscle. And so we don't always know when somebody has crossed that line. But I think ultimately, the faster that we notice that somebody seems to be really starting to obsess about eating really healthy, as an example. There's actually something called orthorexia, where that is where somebody becomes somewhat obsessed with everything I eat has to be healthy. It all has to be bio, or it all has to be low calorie, or it all has to be
clean.
Clean.
I still don't know what that means.
It doesn't mean anything. The other piece is the more time somebody spends obsessing about food, afraid to go out and eat with other people, unable to decide on what foods are safe or okay, that in itself is a really big sort of psychological and social problem, because somebody's world gets really small if they feel like they cannot eat out with a friend, they cannot eat with their family, they cannot eat something their grandmother made them, they cannot go to a friend's house. That level of concern about the quote-unquote healthiness of food, even if that person isn't physically unwell, that is not healthy mentally and socially and emotionally.
Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about?
The one thing I would say for parents is, it's not your fault. Even if a parent has made comments about a kid's body or has restricted food for some reason because a child feels like they're out of control with food, whatever. Eating disorders really are multifactorial, and parents don't cause eating disorders. Even just a diet itself isn't going to cause an eating disorder, even though that is one of the biggest precursors. There's a perfect storm. And so what I want to say to parents is, you can help be preventative, and you can also monitor your child's social media, etc. You can talk very much about body positivity. But I want you to know that if your child develops an eating disorder or has an eating disorder, that is not something that you caused. That is not your fault. You are not a bad parent, and your child can get better.
That's great. Thank you. And where can our listeners find you?
I am at theglobaldietitian.com for my website. And then I'm also at theglobalrd on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Okay. Thank you so much, Diana.
Thank you.